Good morning. Good Sunday morning. Good AFC East winning morning. No, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. No, too much. Whatever it is, good morning. Happy 2022. First hard line of the year. It is great to be with you this morning. We have a packed show for you. So you hear enough of me talking during the week, so let's get to the show. And we will start with State Senator Rob Ort, the minority leader. Senator, good morning.
Joe, good morning. Happy New Year to you.
Happy 2022. And, you know, 2022, we look nationally for Republicans. Could be a good year. It looks right now that it will be a good election year in November. Here in New York State, what are we looking, what are the Republicans' plan heading into 2022?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I think 2022 is going to be a very good year for Republicans. I think we had a preview of that a month and a half ago with the big victory in Virginia, the gubernatorial race there. But I'll look closer to home. Downstate on Long Island, which is a very, you know, a key part of the state when you talk about Republicans and our chances of gaining seats in the Senate. It's key to the gubernatorial race with Lee Zeldin running there, being from Long Island. And, you know, in Long Island, we had sweeping victories around the issue of bail reform and the cashless bail, soft on crime policies that Democrats have put into place. Both DA's races went to the Republican. The county executive in Nassau, who was a Democrat, lost to a Republican, and the Republicans picked up the majority in the legislature in Suffolk County. So I look at that as a very good sign and a harbinger of our prospects. But look, we have to make sure that people know that there's an alternative. There's another option to the Democrats' governing philosophy and what we've seen here in New York State. I think for a lot of people, they've only known Democratic governors. They've only known New York State as a liberal state. And I think we as Republicans have to be clear, concise about what we stand for, putting forward pro-law enforcement policies that we want to make the state safer, putting forward pro-economic, pro-growth policies. We can make the state more affordable, more business-friendly, keep people here, keep people from leaving. And then, obviously, we need to show that we can offer a different way of governing through this pandemic. Instead of governing by fear, instead of making people choose between their job, weaponizing the government against them, we need to be able to look to other states and how they've governed through the last 2 years. And by the way, many of them have had better numbers as far as deaths, as far as cases and hospitalizations than New York State has. So we need to lay out our blueprint. We started that this past week. It's going to be a long road ahead, Joe, but I am very optimistic about our chances to pick up seats in the Senate. I'm very optimistic about our chances in the governor's race. I think it's going to be a good night for Republicans in November 2022.
And you did earlier in the week brought up the Take Back New York 2022. You laid out that plan, and you said, you know, to tell the people of New York they have an alternative, which is kind of refreshing to hear, because right now it seems with the politics of New York State, anyone who isn't, you know, to the left seems like the only alternative is to pack up the U-Haul and get out of New York State.
Well, I certainly can appreciate why people are at that point, right? You look around and you think the Democrats, and not just Democrats, but progressive Democrats. I mean, left Democrats, openly avowed Democratic socialists. These are the folks who are running every level of New York State. They control New York City. They control the governor's mansion, the legislature, and even Washington, D.C. And so I think for people who are conservative, people who believe in individual liberty, people who believe in free enterprise, people who believe in the support of law enforcement, who believe in the strong borders, all these things seem, under attack by the left, and people don't know where to turn. And they think, well, I'm just going to leave. I'm going to leave New York State and go to some other state that respects those things and promotes those things. We as Republicans, I think it's important to lay out that we can do this here in New York, that we have an agenda here in New York that is a contrast to what we've seen from Andrew Cuomo, now from Kathy Hochul, and certainly for my colleagues in the legislature. But we have to be very clear. We can't back away from that agenda. We can't back. I think people are hungry for an alternative, for a different option. But we need to give that to them. We can't run as sort of imitations of our colleagues across the aisle. I think we have to stake out our agenda, and we are going to take back New York. And obviously it starts with us this session going forward. It started last week, and it's going to go on through November of 2022, and hopefully that will lead into a good January 2023.
And I agree with you. All the things that were laid out in your speech for Take Back New York, obviously all things are important. If you asked everyone that's leaving the state, they would mention something that's on this list. But going into 2022, it looks like it'll be Lee Zeldin against Kathy Hochul. Which of these do you think is going to attract those downstate votes? Because let's be honest, that's where it's going to be won or lost for governor. In 2022, what do you think the strong message will be to flip some of those not as far left Democrats that I think you're trying to attract?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think, and I don't want to speak for the Zeldin campaign, but if I'm looking at where things are shaping up, certainly downstate, as I said, when you're talking about Long Island, when you're talking about those New York City suburbs, I think absolutely the crime, the increase in crime, the increase in violent crime is a real cause of concern. In fact, just the other day, the Manhattan District Attorney sort of doubled down on this blanket memo of all these crimes that he's not going to prosecute. Even though he's the lead prosecutor, apparently he doesn't believe that's in his job description. So a lot of the far left Democrats, they're sort of digging in on the soft on crime. Their focus is on the criminal. Their focus is on the criminal is the victim. Our feeling is that the victim is the victim, and we are creating more victims with these policies that are focused exclusively on people who break the law as opposed to people who are trying to abide by it or are supposed to be protected by it or are out enforcing it. And so I think crime, cashless bail, judicial discretion, and there's other laws that are out there that Democrats support, taking away protection for our police officers, forcing them to cover, have their own insurance policies out there. I mean, just crazy ideas. So I think criminal justice, cashless bail, that's going to be a huge issue. I think the issue around education, you're seeing, a real fight about keeping kids in school or going back to remote. You're seeing, things that are being taught in certain schools versus, math and science and things that we should be teaching our kids. Down in New York City, they want to get rid of advanced testing that would allow people a chance to, to move up. I mean, that's advanced testing and allowing kids who are, smart and have a certain abilities to obviously advance themselves and give them their futures a leg up, so to speak. So I think those are going to be the big issues, certainly downstate. Even in districts that are Democratic-leaning, crime always pulls up poorly, Joe. People want to feel safe. They know the economy can't come back. They know the state can't come back. They know we can't keep people here if people don't feel safe to live in New York State and in parts of New York State. So I think that's going to be the number one issue as we go forward to this year and a lot of races.
Also this week, Governor Kathy Hochul gave her first State of the State address. Was there anything that was alarming to you or anything that stuck out to you of her speech?
So, it was a lot of platitudes. Obviously, there was some of the details, and that's just how these speeches go. They were light on. So one thing that concerned me, it was she did spend some time talking about agriculture and farms, which I thought was great. As someone who represents a rural district, and certainly our conference represents a lot of farms and farmers, but she mentioned a overtime tax credit for farmers. Now, there's a major issue that's pending this month about lowering the overtime threshold for farm workers, which farmers and the Farm Bureau unanimously oppose and would be disastrous, not only for our farmers, but for farm workers who want to work here in New York State. I'm concerned that focus on overtime credit could be her telegraphing that there's going to be a lowering of the overtime threshold, and that's her way of trying to maybe offset that lowering, which I think would be a mistake. I still don't think it would be it would undo the damage to our farmers. So that was something I'm going to be watching. She's certainly, her talk about tuition assistance for people who are incarcerated. I rejected that several years ago when her predecessor put it forward. Now she's putting it forward. Look, if someone that goes to jail, Joe, and pays their debt and comes out, if they want to go to college and they want, I'm fine with that. But until, I have plenty of constituents who struggle to put their own kids through college. The idea that we're going to provide tuition assistance tax dollars to people sitting in jail, incarcerated for all kinds of crimes, again, I think that is a completely misguided focus. I think it's completely out of touch with where most New Yorkers are and believe we should be spending tax dollars. So those were two things that jumped out. We could go probably for another hour talking about the speech in general. But those are two things that I thought were problematic or concerning, certainly for me and my conference.
And then there's always COVID. And what do you think of the state now finally, passing out those at-home tests? And then I look at counties like Erie, and they only had 80,000 tests sent to them. I mean, you have people every day. Our text board every day. Hey, where did you find those at-home tests? Where can we get at-home tests? The state buys all these at-home tests, and then I'm looking county by county. I mean, that's barely a fraction of their population. What do you think of the ongoing COVID strategy from Albany?
Well, it's hard to say that there's been a concise strategy. It seems to move and constantly shift. Again, there's other states that I can point to that I think have done a much more consistent, clear COVID strategy, not one based on fear or weaponizing the government against people. The testing shortage in New York State has been, I mean, here we are 2 years into a pandemic, and somehow we couldn't anticipate that people would want or need at-home tests. I know the state is buying them and pushing them out. I know here in Niagara County and in Erie and Western New York. But again, there's still a number of people that can't get access to it. And yet, at the same time, she's telling folks, now healthcare workers, that if you don't get boosted, you're going to have to lose your job. When in fact, we know that people who are boosted, and I know people that are vaccinated and boosted, that still are getting COVID. And conceivably could still pass on COVID. So it just seems that the focus has been misplaced by her, certainly by her predecessor. It seems that they're following political science more than they are actual science. And I think that we need to be focusing more on testing, more on allowing people to make smart decisions in their own lives when it comes to this. If you look at our numbers, the number of deaths, Joe, we lead the nation. I mean, so for all these efforts we've made, for all the people we put on the unemployment line, for all of the businesses that have been shuttered, for all the kids that lost a year of school, it's hard to argue that it has worked tangibly better than states that have not done those things. And so that's where I think our focus needs to be as we go forward.
And, you mentioned the booster shot. And hey, as I always say, I'm vaccinated. But like you said, you've got the virus that people are getting boosted. Just look at the Senate. Look at you had Elizabeth Warren, you had Cory Booker. They were boosted and got COVID. And as you said, they're passing it with this new variant. Do these mandates now for booster shots at colleges and booster shots for the medical profession, does that make any sense?
It doesn't to me. And I want to be clear when I'm not suggesting that somebody not get a vaccine or get a booster shot. If that's what you want to do, I did, and I could explain to anybody or argue why that made sense for me, certainly. I just don't think that if you don't get it, I don't see the science backing up why somebody would have to lose their job or be terminated as a result of it, or why they couldn't go to college as a result of it. That's the point that I think stands out to me. Based on the data and the science, we know that people still can get it and they can still pass it on. Then why would we say if you don't get it, you're going to lose your job, you can't go to college, you can't do? That's the part that's not making a whole lot of sense to me, because the data doesn't back that. If they could say that it was foolproof, then you might have a case to make. I still think there'd be a a constitutional or individual liberty argument, but you could at least make a scientific case why somebody, you know, wouldn't want them working in a hospital, let's say. But we know that factually they still can get it, they still can transmit it. So why are we forcing people to choose between their livelihoods or their academic goals or their job, whatever it might be, based on a vaccine and a booster that probably keeps you out of the hospital, but certainly doesn't guarantee that you're not going to get COVID or transmit it? I think therein lies the inconsistency, and it's become a political focus, right? Some people are just vaccine for vaccine's sake, and other, obviously, you know, there's the other side of that argument too, that no matter what anybody says, they'll never get it. I think we got to be smart about this. We got to use common sense, use what we know, but again, stop using the state as a weaponizing against its residents. Stop dividing people along this pandemic, and let's get to common sense solutions and allow people to live their lives. And that's how we're going to get out of this pandemic.
Absolutely. One final question, also happening this week. Former Governor Andrew Cuomo will not be criminally charged. Were you surprised by this announcement?
I was disappointed. You know, I don't know how often I get surprised anymore by things that I hear, whether it's out of Albany or generally in politics. But, you know, I was disappointed for two reasons, Joe. One is, I think most people would agree that if his name wasn't Andrew Cuomo, no one believes that he would not have been prosecuted were the charges the same. And that's a really frustrating, disappointing thing for a lot of people, the notion that if it was them or if it was someone they knew with the same allegations, they would have been charged. And I think it's also, you know, it's tough for folks to make the argument that women should, you know, come forward. And these women all came forward. And yes, he's out of office, but there's no prosecution going forward against claims in some cases that were pretty serious, you know, sexual assault claims. And that's the one we're talking about in Albany County. And so very disappointing that someone like Andrew Cuomo, who skated for a long time when he was the governor, looks like he's going to continue to skate. I'm glad he's out of office, but there's no question he should face justice in a court of law, in my opinion, not just for this, but for a host of other things, including the nursing home scandal and cover-up. And even there, one has to wonder if there ever will be true justice for those families against the now-disgraced Andrew Cuomo.
And I do have one more question. I lied. I have one more question. We're seeing this in New York City, a new law that allows non-citizens to vote. What do you think of that law, and is there any danger of that becoming a state thing down the road?
Well, you can imagine, and hopefully your listeners know, I vehemently oppose that law. I have warned against this kind of thing for a couple of years now. I was firmly convinced that my colleagues across the aisle that this is really where they wanted to go, that they wanted to grant sort of de facto citizenship to people who were here that were not citizens. And the best way to do that, well, you know, there's driver's licenses, there's all kinds of unemployment benefits, which they've done both of those things. But sort of the next thing to me always was voting. New York City, as you mentioned, passed a law, 800,000 as of today, non-citizens will be eligible to vote for New York City elections. I have every reason to believe at some point there will be a push to make this statewide. And it is something that every New Yorker should oppose. There is nothing, I don't care what your political background is, there's nothing in the Constitution that should back up. And I think if it's challenged, the New York City law, it will fail on constitutional grounds. But I think it's a very danger, and it shows how far out of touch and how dangerous the left is. They're actually trying to undermine U.S. citizenship, American citizenship, by allowing people who are not here legally, who are not citizens, the right to vote and elect who runs this country. Very dangerous, very bad. We will oppose that tooth and nail should it ever come up in the state Senate.
I had to do a double take. I couldn't believe it when I first read it. I had to reread it again to make sure I wasn't reading it wrong. State Senator, before I let you go, how do you feel about the Bills against the New Jersey Jets?
You know, against the Newark Jets, I feel very good. Now, I also felt good when they played Jacksonville earlier, but that was a different part of the season. I will be in attendance today, braving the elements, but I feel very good about today's game, second consecutive AFC East championship, and then we'll we'll see who we're hosting next week.
Yeah, it'll be nice to win it at home. It'll also be nice if the Cleveland Browns can help us out and we move up to that third spot.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they will. The Bengals aren't playing a lot of their starters. I think the Browns win. Bills move up to third, and then we'll see if we play the Colts or the Patriots or whoever we play in the playoffs.
It'll be nice. State Senator Rob Ort, Minority Leader, thank you so much for joining me, and go Bills.
Thanks, Joe. Go Bills.
That is State Senator Rob Ort. As I mentioned, he is the Minority Leader in the State Senate. When we come back, Michael Cornell will be joining us to talk about Test to Stay. Where are we when it comes to Test to Stay here in Erie County? We'll answer that when we come back. It's Hardline on WBEN. Well, welcome back. Hardline, first episode of 2022. Happy to have you with us this morning. Joe Beamer with you for another 90 minutes. No, 81 minutes, if we do the math correctly. It is AFC East winning day. And I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves, but I feel pretty good. Joining us this segment as we talk about the Test to Stay plan in Erie County is the president of the Erie Niagara School Superintendents Association, Michael Cornell. Mike, good morning.
Morning, Joe. How are you?
Doing well this morning. Mike, there was a meeting last week about Test to Stay here in Erie County. What did we learn and what is the plan going forward?
Well, we learned that I think the delays are behind us. School leaders, public and private, are ready to go. We talked a bit about process. We talked a little bit about how the changes in the quarantine periods and isolation periods in the state will impact Test to Stay. We talked about availability of test kits. So we had all those conversations, and I think the real outcome is you're going to see Test to Stay in most public school districts and most private schools get up and running this week.
So this could be in place by Monday for most schools?
Yeah, so there's this kind of weird period where you had a bunch of kids who were quarantined last week under the 10-day quarantine rule. Now we shift to five. So we have to kind of, you know, in Hamburg, our nurses were calling families over the weekend to give them new return dates under the 5-day return rule. So I think what you'll see, like in Hamburg, the way it's going to roll out is if we identify any close contacts on Monday, I think it'll roll out this way in most school districts, you know, starting Monday. If we identify close contacts on Monday, then they would be eligible to test to stay beginning on Tuesday.
You know, we've noticed around Erie County, around New York State, the lack of being able to find a test. Have school districts secured enough tests for this plan to go through?
I think for the most part, we feel optimistic about it. We've got notification over the weekend of some state deliveries of tests. You know, I'll compliment the county executive, Mark Poloncarz, and his budget team. I think they've been pretty active out there trying to find tests that we can use for Test to Stay in Erie County. So I think, and I think a lot of us also have some tests that we can use to start. So, you know, I think for right now, we feel like given the supply chain issues that we have, I think we feel like we're in a fairly decent spot. But we also don't know how many close contacts we're going to identify, how many tests we're going to need. The reduction of the quarantine period from 10 days to 5 days will certainly have the effect of reducing the number of tests that we actually have to give through Test to Stay.
And now how would this work? So as you said, if you're identified as a close contact on Monday, do you go into school on Tuesday to test? Is there a site? Is it a take-home test?
Yeah, the tests all have to be given on school property. The state does give the option to counties of at-home testing. Erie County Department of Health chose to require that the tests happen on school property. So what will happen is, you know, all of the close contact notifications are made by schools. I mean, that work has been done since the beginning by schools. School districts spend between 1,500 and 2,000 hours across the county a week on quarantine notifications, close contact case investigations, and the like. So a parent will get a phone call from somebody at the school, and they say that your child has been identified as close contact. They'll let them know that they can test to stay the next day. Child will come to school. I think most school districts would prefer parents bring their child to school so that they can, drop their child off and wait for the result, and that the test is positive. They'd have to bring the child home. The child would have to isolate. But if the test is negative, they go to their classes. So the test will happen on the school property, probably in the health office. But I think every school district is going to try to figure out a spot according to their space need. They'll test. Typically, I think the way it's going to roll out in most districts, you'll test on the day after you've been identified as a close contact, and then you'd also test on day five because the requirement is that students test 2 out of the 5 days. So that's how it'll roll. Typically the first day after they've been identified as a close contact, and then on day five. And then after day five, there's no more test to stay. You just stay as long as you're asymptomatic. That's a key part of it. If the child develops symptoms while they're in the test to stay protocol, then they have to isolate. They won't be able to test to stay.
So that was my next question. So if you test positive, say, on Tuesday, in 5 days, which would be the following Monday, if you test positive again, do you have to stay now? Now do you go to the 10-day quarantine, and then you're welcome back in 5 extra days?
Well, remember, these are unvaccinated close contacts who don't have symptoms and who haven't tested positive. So as long as you continue to test negative, then you're able to go to school. But if on that day five the child tests positive, then they would have to isolate for 5 days according to the state requirement.
But you don't have to test negative to come back to school. You just have to wait the 5 days if you test positive.
So if you test positive on a Monday and you continue to your symptoms resolve, you're fever-free for 24 hours without fever-reducing medication, then you can return on day six without testing negative. That's correct.
All right. I'm sorry. I think I confused people. I apologize. So if you test negative day one, on day five, you have to test again. If you test positive, on day six, you're welcome back to school.
No. We're conflating two different people. So if we just take the circumstance of a child who is identified as a close contact and they're unvaccinated, right? So we're just talking about a child who's unvaccinated or not fully vaccinated, who has never tested positive. They're just identified as a close contact. They sat next to each other on a bus. They sat, shoulder to shoulder in lunch. They're 7 years old. They had their masks off during lunch because you got to eat with a mask off, obviously. And for some reason, they're shoulder to shoulder, like looking at Pokemon cards, right? Which, again, we separate the kids in lunch. This is not a typical circumstance. Let's just say this happens. So the child who's the close contact, right, that child could come back to school the next day by testing to stay. Right. And then they also, as long as they test negative throughout, then, they continue to go to school. And then on day six, the quarantine period would be over anyway. So then also is the test to stay period. They just come to school as normal without any testing. So that's a child who is an unvaccinated close contact and who is asymptomatic. That is what test to stay is for. Right. So then if we take another child, a child who actually tests positive. They typically don't, COVID-19 does not transmit well in school, obviously, as we know, but the child goes to a sleepover, a hockey tournament, Aunt Millie's birthday party, whatever it is, and they don't feel well, they test positive. So child, experiences symptoms on Monday, family takes their child to get tested on Monday, the child turns up positive. Then you're talking about an isolation period. Isolation is for children, people, who actually test positive for COVID. Quarantine is for people who didn't test positive, but they're close contacts, right? So now we're talking about a child who actually tested positive. They have COVID. So that means they have to do a 5-day isolation period. It used to be 10, now it's 5. So now what that child does is they stay home, obviously, because they're isolated. And as long as their symptoms improve, or a lot of these kids are asymptomatic anyway, so as long as they remain without symptoms or their symptoms are resolving, and they're 24 hours at least fever-free without the use of fever-reducing medication, then that child can return to school after their five-day isolation period is over. So, and the thing, so this conversation brings up a good point, Joe, because like I just sent a letter out to my community, and one of the last paragraphs, they said, look, there's a lot of moving parts to all this stuff. It's going to be super confusing for families. And the one thing that they can count on, not just in Hamburg, but across Western New York, is you have amazing school-based nurses, school administrators, and other school staff who are going to work with families to make sure they understand exactly what their child needs to do and why, and make sure that we keep our schools safe by making sure that we don't have COVID-infected kids in our school, but also to make sure that we're removing barriers to school attendance, because we know that we need our kids in school if they're healthy and well.
Now, you keep saying unvaccinated. What is the rule for a fully vaccinated student? Are they welcome back to school without any kind of testing?
Yes.
Okay, so that stays the same. If you're a vaccinated close contact, you keep going to school unless you feel sick.
Yep. Correct. Yes.
Now, I know this is something that we're probably not far, we're not close to, but is there any talk on masking policies, easing those up, or being more strict when it comes to masking in schools?
I have not heard either. I think masking protocols are going to remain what they have been since September of 2020. We have not had any significant outbreaks of COVID anywhere that I'm aware of in the state that has anything to do with the current masking protocols that are very common across the state. So I've not heard any talk of tightening mask mandates or removing them. Although obviously, you know, one of the things that I think we have to start to make sense of is what does school look like when we reach the endemic phase, right? We have better line of sight into where the COVID-19 moves through the community and impacts people. We have more people who are vaccinated. We have, you know, the antivirals and other treatments are much more accessible to a wider range of people. We have to make sense of what we do in school so that it's less disruptive to in-person learning, you know, by requiring quarantine. You know, we have to, I think at some point, we have to take off the table a third year of mask mandates and things like that. Like that at some point, we need to reconcile ourselves as a society that we can't be talking about these mandates and disruptions to the school day for 2022-2023. And we should never, ever be talking about preemptive school closings again. I mean, the fact that it's being done in Chicago and Milwaukee, I'm sure the bars and the restaurants and the liquor stores are open in Chicago, yet the schools are closed, which calls into question exactly what are the priorities of a society that would allow that to happen.
That's another thing I wanted to ask. Has that been stressed to the districts locally, the importance of keeping in school and not going back to that virtual? Because, you know, a lot of parents see what's going on in Chicago and, you know, reports of other districts around the country and, you know, fear that that could be coming back to Western New York.
The idea of a preemptive school closing is not, I mean, I'm completely against it. You've heard me say it 100 times, Joe. And I think every school superintendent would echo that. And I'll give some credit to the president, the governor, and I do believe County Executive Poloncarz understands the importance of having schools be open 5 days a week to kids. You know, so preemptively closing schools in Western New York or across the state seems extremely unlikely. But, I mean, it's also true that any school district or any particular school at some point could be faced with a staffing problem if they have, you know, a significant number of staff who can't come in and they can't safely staff the school. You know, that could be a challenge for a school that might be too difficult to overcome depending on, you know, which staff and how many of them are able to come in. So, but to preemptively close, I mean, I don't think that's going to happen because, you know, three things have been true since the beginning of the pandemic. First, school, there's no safer place for a child to be than in a school. We know that schools are incredibly important because of the needs we meet: academic, social, emotional, mental health, physical, nutritional. You know, all of those needs are met in the school, and they're incredibly important in the lives of our children. And we need to make sure that our schools are open 5 days a week for in-person learning. I don't think there's any more important societal priority than making sure we're educating our children in person.
And, you know, something else that we see starting to happen, we see it at the college level. I just wonder if it's been discussed, and that would be vaccine mandates for certain grade levels going into September.
You know, I haven't heard too much talk of that. I mean, you run into a bit of a challenge with that. You know, particularly with our younger kids, vaccine uptake is maybe 38-40% on our 5 to 11s across the state. You know, I think you've got a lot of parents who are still reluctant to vaccinate their children if their child has no underlying condition or no other comorbidity, they're not immunocompromised. I think a lot of families are looking at the cost benefit and saying, you know what, right now, for a lot of children, they are asymptomatic. And, you know, there's some reluctance to vaccinate children against a disease that is likely to not cause them a seriously negative health outcome. So when I talk to parents, there's just a lot of hesitation, particularly when you would consider that the most, I would say, one of the most heavily vaccinated and boosted workforces anywhere in the country, certainly in New York State, is our education workforce. So they have protected themselves in whatever way they feel they need to from COVID-19. So I think a lot of parents look at that and say they want to hold off a little bit because they want to do their own cost-benefit analysis instead of having it done for them. And I think the legislature would just have to grapple with the fact that it would be just another extremely divisive issue at a time when most people are growing very weary of a series of COVID-related policies that have the effect of driving wedges between people.
Exactly. And one final thing, how do you feel about the Buffalo Bills today?
I feel pretty good, Joe. You know, I think the Bills have, you know, I think they've diversified their offense in a way that allows them to win in a lot of different ways. So I think the coaches have done a good job of making sure that they're ready to attack the Jets or anybody else according to what they do well, and their defense is great. So I feel good.
Michael, I know it's been a busy week. I appreciate you putting some time aside for me on Sunday.
Okay, yes, sir. Good talking to you.
That is Michael Cornell. He is the superintendent at Hamburg Central Schools, also the president of the Erie Niagara School Superintendents Association, joining me. Very important stuff there. If you missed any of that interview, you can find it on WBEN.com and on the Odyssey app. When we come back, we're going to D.C. to talk to Buffalo's own Dave Leventhal. That's after news here on WBEN.